From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 729, Security Beyond the Edge with guest Ned Pyle. Recorded Monday, August 17th, 2020. Run As Radio is produced each week by Sound Thoughts LLC. For more information, visit soundthoughtsllc.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brendan. This is Richard Campbell. Thanks for listening to Run As Radio. Bringing back one of my favorites today, Ned Pyle, or is it Nerd Pyle, who's a multi-year Microsoft veteran and principal program manager in the Windows Server Cloud and Enterprise Engineering Group, managing replication, remote file protocols like Storage Replica, SMB, DFSR, and Scale-Up File Server. Are you still that? Because you've been telling us to stop using SMB1 for a long time now.
Yeah, I still do most of that. I did manage to hand off Storage Replica to a series of suckers. I mean,
young, ambitious folk.
Yeah, well, I don't know. John Marlin, I don't know if you know John Marlin. He's like one of the program managers who owns clustering. And I think he came to Microsoft in like 96, so not exactly some young buck. But my anniversary, as you pointed out, my anniversary was for 15 years just happened, and he sort of chuckles when he sees my little tiny little statue.
Yeah, so he's got a few more years in. Well, especially in the Windows aspect of Microsoft, like 30-year veterans are not that uncommon. You get pulled into that big machine, you can stay there for a long, long time.
Yeah, sure. That's I have an intern who is, I manage this summer, and a dev intern to go with her. My intern is working on some storage migration service stuff, and it's pretty irritating when they ask me to provide them with a KB article or something that I wrote that explains something they're working on.
Yeah,
and they realize, you know, the content they're looking at might not, you know, they might not have been born.
Yeah, it was written. Published before they were born. Yeah, no, had that one, you know. I stand up in front of an audience going, hey, I wrote my first line of code in 1977. He's like, 10 years before I was born? It's like, okay, yeah, thanks for that. Okay, that's great. Excellent.
Super duper. It's really great.
Hey, I want to read a comment from a show we did a while ago in August of 2017. So 3 years and a million years ago. In pandemic years. That was the Turn Off SMB1 show, which should have been resolved by now. And this comment, admittedly, is 3 years old. It's from someone named Fog Free. I'm not sure what that means. He said, even relatively new routers from very prominent manufacturers are still using SMB1. I just learned that when turning off an SMB1 client on my Win10 PC, I don't think you're safe to turn off SMB1 if you're sharing files from your consumer router. Is that still true? I mean, 3 years on?
That was true. That was true then. It's much less true now.
Okay, so it's getting less true. You're still maintaining the list of badly behaved SMB1 clients out there?
Yeah, I still maintain a website called Still Needs SMB1. It's a clearinghouse. It's just a blog post that I update.
Right.
From time to time, people send me, you know, either vendors or products or specific models and stuff in an email, and I just pop it in there. It takes 2 seconds, and I still occasionally update it, but the updates went from being 5 and 10 a week to being 1, and then to being 1 a month, and then to being multiple months where I won't hear anything. And yeah.
Nice. Well, and I appreciate that you are getting feedback from other people who are like, hey, I ran into this. It needs SMB1. I pressed on the vendor, and it's not in their documentation anywhere, but yeah, it still needs SMB1.
Yeah, the vendors really, this was a great grassroots kind of movement, honestly. I mean, I started the process, but by sort of encouraging and allowing customers to go through and basically sort of shame vendors. And
effectively, yeah.
Yeah, they really, really moved the needle, and some really big ones turned around in a hurry. Some really, really big ones early on really got some bad press on it.
Yeah.
And they even email, I said they were starting getting emails from vendors who would not return my calls.
Nice.
So it really did work. And the telemetry and data that we get back now shows we really do see a really substantial lowering of SMB1
nice.
Usage almost everywhere.
Well, and it makes sense that when customers are calling them saying, this is bad, you know, I don't want to use your product when you're like this, like you need to fix this, that it takes away a lot of excuses in a big hurry for not bothering.
Well, let me tell you, a funny thing just happened that I just talked about a few months ago on Twitter was me and my team accidentally removed SMB1 from the RS5 version of Windows 10 Pro, the client.
Oh.
So in the past, it came with it just like it would on home, mm-hmm. and then it would turn itself off if you weren't using it.
Right.
And Enterprise and Server and stuff would have SMB1 just off by default, and you had to kind of go out of your way. But in the smaller sort of unmanaged environments, part of our strategy was easing you out, right? If you're not using it, okay, we'll get rid of it.
Yeah.
And that had been broken for like a year and a half, where if you got a brand new Pro machine, it didn't have SMB1, and no one complained for a year and a half.
Wow.
So that was huge.
That's right? Great news.
I finally got a bug report, and I was like, what are they talking about? This can't be broken. People would have yelled by now.
Yeah.
But no one had yelled for a year and a half.
And it had been broken for months and months.
For a long, long time.
It had been broken. Awesome.
And you know, some customers probably just turned it back on now that they knew what the experience was like. But a lot of them just didn't even notice.
Didn't need it, didn't care, happy it was gone.
That's been pretty great. So that sort of pushed me towards, you know, the next phase where we're really starting to talk seriously about, you know, just off everywhere.
Yeah, that's great. And I got a call back to Fog here. Thanks so much for your comment. Even if it was 3 years ago, I read it on the show. So a Run As Radio mug is on its way to you. And if you'd like a Run As Radio mug, write a comment on the website at runasradio.com or on the social medias, because I publish every show to Facebook and LinkedIn. And if you comment there and I read it on the show, I'll send you a mug. Have you got a mug, Ned?
You did send me a mug. It's a quality mug.
Excellent.
I think it's in the office, so it's a dusty mug.
Yeah, it's a neglected mug now, huh?
Cobweb mug. Spider condo mug.
You've not been there in months, I presume. Have you gone in for any reason?
March 7th, I think.
Oh, so
we actually aren't allowed in the buildings anymore. Our badges don't work anymore. You have to get a special excuse to even get onto campus.
That's really interesting. And that's a huge facility that's basically deserted now, right? Just maintenance in there.
Yeah, I mean, it holds, I think we usually have 40,000 people there. It's empty.
Yeah. And now it's a few hundred. It's just the folks taking care of the place, essentially.
A rounding error of caretakers, basically.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Well, and I'm glad you're well. I presume you're well. We seem to be functioning still, months along into this. Still lots more to go. It doesn't seem like anything's going to end anytime soon.
Nope.
Got to keep doing the thing. So, you've been writing some blog posts around this broader concepts of securing things. Do you want to dig into this with me? What have you been up to?
Yeah. So there's a blog out there. I'm not sure how many of your readers are familiar with it, mm-hmm. called IT Ops Talk. It's actually a team here at Microsoft of a dozen real experts in Windows Server and cloud operations and hybrid technology. If you ever went to some of the Ignite road shows, they were the speakers traveling around the world.
Right.
You know, the Rick Clauses and the Oren Thomases and all those folks, you know, really well-known evangelist folks.
Folks I've been on my show, even Thomas Maurer has been on my show now.
Thomas is on. Yeah. So they are, you know, super duper experts in various areas of Windows and cloud technology. Mm-hmm. And then they're, you know, sort of broad, you know, I know a lot about everything type folks. You know, they're real sort of superstars that we count on to, you know, put out the word about stuff we do. Anyway, they have this nice blog. It updates very frequently. I hope people go there.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, hey, you doing anything? And I was like, yeah, I'm making the next version of Windows Server. What? And they said, how about you do some guest posts for us?
Oh, nice.
And I had a couple of these things in the back of my head, and I just needed an excuse. And you know, when they do this, they're like, can you do it by next week? So the excuse turns into a fire.
Right.
And, so I wrote, you know, I went through having, you know, a lot of this stuff in an outline that I've been working on for months and having a good skeleton to this, wrote two blog posts about really securing SMB, like having a comprehensive strategy around securing SMB at both the edge of your device, mm-hmm. and the edge of your networks, which now means like the universe because of people working from home, and talking about protecting you from interception attacks. Interception attacks is how we are trying to refer to man in the middle. So a much more like specific statement than the general pointless man in the middle phraseology of the last 30, 40 years. And so these two pieces I wrote are basically just a series of steps and guidance around, you know, doing my favorite bit of advice, which is making yourself unattractive to attackers.
Yeah. Like
no one, even, you know, the most crazily defended targets are invulnerable.
No.
But the goal is here to add layers of defense and make it so that you're not worth the trouble, because there are so many other folks out there who have, you know, a few or no defenses. They'll get the focus of a bad person.
Yeah, you know, the metaphor I've used is, you remember the club, the thing you put on your steering wheel?
Yeah.
It's not something that makes your car impossible to steal. It just makes it harder to steal than the other car. So it's like...
It's like, you know, door locked and...
Because there's an awful lot of theft that's just casual. It's like, I just needed a car. This is the most convenient car. Oh, it's got a club. It's not convenient. I'll use someone else. Like, if someone's targeting you security-wise, that's a whole other class of problem. But just making yourself an inconvenient target, that helps a lot.
Right. And I go through these layers in both these articles, making you more and more and more nasty to attack. And if you really do all of this stuff, you will be quite, quite irritating, quite nasty to attack. You'll go through a lot of work, and some of it's some pretty painful work. And some of it, you're going to have to make upgrades to backend systems like Active Directory, or you're going to need to, you know, toss out garbage you have on your network, which is requiring lower security.
Right.
But if you do even some of these all the way up to the full mamma jamma, it will be extremely difficult to walk away with somebody's credentials, to do things like, you know, pass the hash, to grab data, to phish, or to leak things out that are, you know, even if your users are working from home, even if that's the case.
Right.
You can get quite secure using some of these methods.
Well, and it's on the radar of everybody doing operations with so many people work from home. It's like, where's my perimeter now?
Yeah, it's like three bajillion houses.
Yeah. With you know, WRT54G Wi-Fi with the default SSID and password still on it, like, and on and on and on. So, what can we do as IT folks? Where should we be looking to sort of deepen our ability to defend the system as it's spread around like this?
Well, I have two major sort of sections here to talk about, two articles to talk about. I'm sure at the end we can share names and URLs and stuff. The first piece is around what I call beyond the edge. Like, it's very simple. Not as many people are doing it as they should be.
Yeah.
But it's pretty simple on a corporate network just to say, okay, no inbound SMB access. Nobody needs to come into my network for SMB purposes.
Like,
that's clearly some C2 red team, you know, command and control data egress nonsense. Like, there's no need for that. Let's just block SMB inbound. The same way we block pretty much everything inbound except for, you know, some webby nonsense.
Yeah, port 80, port 443, right?
445 in our case is for SMB. That's the one to remember when you're thinking about SMB. It's port 445.
Right.
And, but the next piece of advice I give you in this article is blocking it outbound.
Interesting.
So oftentimes people don't have outbound firewall rules at the edge of their networks. And the reason why I do that and talk about that is ensuring that you're not having users accidentally connecting to attackers, for example, because they got phished.
Right.
So if I get an email that says, like, click here for important business information stuff, and that's actually a UNC path that takes me out of the network into the internet to some bad person's server, where they now, because I still have NTLM turned on or some other things going on that I'll talk about in a second, they have my credentials. They didn't care about SMB. They were just using it as a likely vector, something that you would be likely to use. So locking outbound access is the next important thing. Now you need you might need exceptions for that specifically with cloud technology, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you're using Azure Files, if you're using Amazon FSx, you know, their file services thingy, if you're using Office 365, if you're doing some remote app stuff, you would need to allow IP addresses for those. Hopefully you're using VPNs to get to them anyway, but
yeah.
You know, this restriction at least would stop you from just immediately breaking yourself.
Well, it makes me wonder how many people think they're using a VPN, and when they block out POM 445, stuff does break and you find out you weren't using it after all.
Right. That's true. It's actually, SMB doesn't particularly work well over the internet because plenty of ISPs don't allow it to flow through.
Yeah. It's not a good protocol for remote anyway.
No. And that's over the internet. It's not the place for it to be,
yeah.
Which is funny because that was the original, you know, one of the original ideas around file access that was supposed to be an internet technology. But we're working on that. I have this thing called QUIC for SMB, SMB over QUIC, a technology we're going to release, well, sometime.
Any day now.
That encapsulates SMB inside of QUIC tunnels. And it gives you basically like an on-the-fly VPN for SMB where you don't have to do anything. Like, it just works.
Wow.
So that's for another Run As Radio, but it's actually really, really, really cool.
Yeah. Let me know when you're ready to talk about that, Ned, because I think that's a great show for sure.
Sure. Anyway, so when we get to this Beyond the Edge piece, mm-hmm. people are pretty good about the inbound. People are getting better about the outbound.
Right.
And then they're almost always doing nothing inside the network. The lateral movement stuff, where most of your SMB is actually the most valuable to an attacker, where they're, you know, you're supposed to be talking to other machines inside the network. So mm-hmm. people rarely, if ever, secure SMB on the inside of the network. And there is a process and an ability to do this. And what I talk about in the article is actually using the Windows Defender firewall, the built-in one,
mm-hmm.
build up effectively and deploy a list of approved servers for SMB.
Right.
Not allowing anybody just to talk to anybody, especially client to client, which is almost never important to do almost on any protocol.
Right.
Never mind.
Two workstations should not be conversing yeah. that way.
And yet so often is the case.
Yeah.
So Windows 10 clients have their firewalls turned off because some application vendor was too lazy to figure out why their app didn't work. That yeah. kind of nonsense. And so this article goes through basically an inventory process. And I have a PowerShell script that you could run to find all of your file services mm-hmm. inside the environment. You know, servers that are hosting files, which you can build up a list and of what's legitimate and what's not for an allow and a block list. And then how to use the firewall to effectively say, you're not going to connect. You're going to have a list of, you know, of allowed servers that you're mm-hmm. supposed to be going to. And you deploy that through group policy, let's say. Or Intune or some other, I mean, who knows, whatever your thingy of choice is, I don't care.
Right.
And then you're also basically going to have a block list that says nobody else. And that nobody else will help you with that phishing case, right?
No sure.
matter if your user takes that laptop and goes home, or more likely just works from home these days and isn't behind your corporate firewall at all, you can deploy however you can get onto those machines a set of firewall rules that will say you can only do SMB to these approved targets, and if you're not on that list, you don't connect.
It doesn't work. Yeah.
And if you do connect, we should allow it to use things like IPsec or null encapsulation
yep.
or any of those things to basically provide a little bit of authentication so that we have a block list and an allow list. And basically, even you don't maintain anymore anything but a short list of things you're supposed to do, and the rest of the list is just not allowed.
Right.
And you can, you know, it's easy to loosen that up over time if you need to for application purposes, mm-hmm. but it gives you right away a really nice hammer to say, no, this server that you see at Starbucks right now when you went to go, you know, sit there and write your novel at lunch or something like that. you have no need to get to it.
Yeah,
that email, that thing that just showed up and tried to get you to connect, it just won't matter because
it's just not going to work for you.
You're just not allowed to go through this outbound firewall block list that's on your client.
That's great. And Ned, I'm going to interrupt for one moment for this very important message. Users are in the office and out of the office, but your problems are still your problems. Windows is still Windows, your browsers are still your browsers, and your users are still your users. How are you going to simplify management of them in the brave new world of both on-premises and remote work? Relax. You've got PolicyPack. PolicyPack works with both always connected and always on the go machines to help you increase security and manageability on your multi-session Windows 10 instances. With PolicyPack, you'll be able to remove local admin rights, yet enable standard users to install software or overcome UAC prompts. Proactively block malware and unknownware. Configure and lock down browser and application settings. Dynamically configure file associations, start screen, and taskbar settings for every user. Use your existing group policy or Intune to deliver the settings once and have your users get exactly the settings they need in the office or on the go. Simplify modern desktop management no matter where your users are with PolicyPack. To learn more, head over to policypack.com/remotework. That's policypack.com/remotework. PolicyPack, securing your standards. Listeners to this podcast are eligible to win a free copy of the Cybex Wiley book entitled MDM, Fundamental Security in the Modern Desktop, Using Intune, Autopilot, and Azure to Manage, Deploy, and Secure Windows 10 by Jeremy Moskowitz, Enterprise Mobility MVP. Simply pick Run As Radio in the dropdown when you visit policypack.com/remotework. Good luck, and we hope you win. And we're back. It's Run As Radio. I'm Richard Campbell. That's Ned Pyle. And we're talking a bit about the sort of SMB defense approach. We've sort of explored beyond the edge, which I think a lot of folks are living in these days with the work from homers. But can we talk about other classes of attack, more layers of security we can add to this besides just the firewall in and out?
Yeah, so that's the first piece. And that's the that's the easy piece. Even though the part that I was describing didn't sound too easy.
Yeah, okay. We got that. But I do appreciate that just setting those rules in place, that by default, inbound and outbound are no, except for these specific cases, that's a lot of trouble fixed.
That's huge, right? That could take your client down from basically talking to anybody in the universe at once down to talking to, say, 20 machines.
Right.
And that really makes it much harder for the attacker who now has to either own one of those 20 machines or get on your machine hardcore enough to manipulate that list, in which case that machine's already wrecked anyway.
Yeah. If they're changing policy on your machine, you're in trouble.
Yeah. So that's a big, easy, quick attack defense mechanism.
Excellent.
The other one, which is much more, I think, interesting to talk about, honestly, is the interception attack protections. And that's where you're trying to prevent somebody from harvesting by sitting in the middle of your SMB communications or pretending to be somebody else, pretending to be a legitimate server at the end, or presenting yourself by name as one of those legitimate servers that you were supposed to be allowed to go to, and taking away the options for that type of attack, that interception attack, to work. And there are really 9 or 10 things you can do, and some of them are super obvious, like make sure you're patched and make sure you're with SMB1, things which really, pure holes in defense because they're bugs or because you're like using a protocol which is completely unsafe and can't really be fixed. So let's say you're at the point now where you're using SMB3, which is good. There are techniques you can use to make that type of interception attack very, very, very difficult. So one would be, some of them are going to sound kind of weird or esoteric. I might name some things you've never heard of. There's a thing called insecure guest logon. Back in the NT days and the Windows 90 something days, everybody used guest inside workgroups because nobody had any notion about security back in the 80s and 90s.
Right.
Anywhere in computing, nobody had legitimate security anywhere.
Right.
And there was a behavior where, specific behavior with SMB that we used, we said, you tried to use a password to log in, and it wasn't right. oh, you must be, you know, trying to access this as a guest. So we'll just try guest and let you in. Oh, how convenient. You're in. Thanks. Because that was, it was a world where in work groups and home users, they didn't have passwords. So you try to log in with probably a null password or right password or some garbage. And it'd be like, these kids, they don't know what they're doing. Let's let them in with a guest.
Let them in anyway. They'd never hurt anybody. It'll be fine. Everything will be fine.
We're all fine. Anyway, that's the stupidest idea ever, right?
Yeah.
And because it says, like, if a bad person, you connect to their server where they don't even know what your password is and they don't care. They're like, oh, no, come on in.
No, don't worry. Here's your guest credential. Knock yourself out. Have a great time.
Here's that file you're looking for. Oh, it's malware. So we turned all that off. And
hey, thanks for that. I appreciate that.
You're welcome. That came starting at Windows 10 in a particular release, in the 17.9 release. But plenty of older clients did not have that thing turned off. So you can go through and make sure that you're not using guest auth, for example.
Right.
Another thing you can do, do you remember WebDAV?
Oh, my goodness. Yes.
From the 90s?
That's a long time ago, friend.
So WebDAV is still cooking right now.
Really?
With all of it. Yeah, it's really still out there. It's from like 1992 or something.
Yeah.
WebDAV is an HTTP extension, and it allows you to do file access over HTTP.
Right.
So your UNC path turns into HTTP on the wire. Of course, it has no security.
Because why would we need that? It's the internet. Everybody's friendly.
Everybody's friendly on the internet.
Yeah.
It does support using TLS to, you know, make it into an HTTPS connection.
Okay.
But nobody ever turns that on the servers. So nobody has any certs configured.
Well, I love that we're encrypted, but not authenticated. That's awesome. Let's do that.
Yeah. The whole thing is absolutely terrible. So you can turn that off. It's been unused in Windows for many years.
Yeah.
For I think the last application to ever use it was Office, and they stopped caring about it years ago. We asked.
Mm-hmm.
So you can take the web client service and just stop it. And from now on, there won't be any sort of like, well, I couldn't get in with SMB, but let me try HTTP. That'll be gone.
Yeah.
And that allows a certain kind of attack. You know, people would let you come in, sort of surreptitiously getting connected to the server you thought it was, and then here's your payload of ransomware.
Yep.
Then a couple other things you can do that are more, not really SMB techniques. They're Windows techniques of SMB. They're mm-hmm. specific to the Windows implementation. You can turn on something called UNC hardening.
Okay.
UNC hardening is a group policy which turns into some registry values that says, if you want to connect to this server or this share or this server and this share, you have to meet some requirements. You have to use Kerberos. You have to sign, or you have to encrypt. And while it doesn't necessarily defeat all of the vectors of a interception attack, like it won't stop you from harvesting creds, it would stop you from talking to a server that is not mutually authenticated, is not part of your domain, not part of your environment, is not signed, not encrypted. It basically puts all the power on the client to say, I don't care if your server is not secured. I'm only going to connect to secure servers.
Right.
And if you let me, we'll do it right now. And if you won't, then we're not connected.
Yeah. I'm just going to let that go.
That's one you can control through group policy. It goes. We backported that all the way back to Vista.
Wow.
Cheers. Yeah. Another thing you can do, which we just added and did not advertise very much, is, and this is maybe for administrators to use,
yeah,
is when you map drives using, say, like the netuse command or new SMB mapping, we added parameters to require signing or encryption on the fly. So you could say, map my drive, and I want this mapped drive to be encrypted. And if it won't encrypt, we're not mapping the drive.
Interesting.
And that guarantees another spot where you are using, protecting that connection. Nobody will be able to read any data in that. Nobody will be able to tamper with it. Basically, once you get an encrypted connection to a server, there's nothing anybody can do on the wire whatsoever. I mean, it's that whole point.
Right. So the man-in-the-middle attack's kind of over because everything's encrypted on the path.
Yeah. So no longer are you saying, like, I want the server to decide, like, oh, these shares are encrypted and these aren't, or this server's encrypted and this isn't. Client, guy on my laptop, lady on my server doing terminal services, I want to be able to mandate it from my client perspective that we're going to do encryption right now. We've moved much more of the of that, you know, decision process from the server to the client, so that you start the entire process secure and protected from interception attack.
But it sounds like I can push this down as a group policy that all of my clients insist on encryption for any of these shares.
That part right now is, you can require encryption out of the client. Most people don't, because they end up with a bunch of servers that don't support encryption.
Right.
This one is like a this is sort of a in the middle process that says, like, okay, for logon scripts or whenever Sally from the IT department wants to map a drive, it says, let's go encrypted right now on that.
Right.
And we can deal with whatever happens if it doesn't work, because that's kind of a controlled scenario. You can make the clients require encryption. And then that means you have to get rid of every last old server, every last third-party device that support SMB3, blah, blah, blah. So a blanket one like that might be harder to turn
off. It's going to break a bunch of stuff.
Yes.
But if every new one being made attempts to use encryption and then logs if it can't?
I think the logging there would be the help desk ticket.
Okay. So if it attempts to use encryption and if it fails, then
it's going to be I think we do actually do have an operational log on the SMB client that says an encryption failed. I'm 99.9% sure I wrote an event for that like 8 years ago. But I'd be hard-pressed to remember what it was. Look it up on the show.
Sure. But more saliently is like when it I'm going to insist on encryption. If I can't get it, then I'm going to raise an error, which is going to stimulate you to say, did you really need that map drive? Or are you going to go talk to IT about how do I get this map drive?
Yeah, you will certainly get a very noticeable error out of the refusal for an individual person in the sales department to be able to translate that into something meaningful. Probably not.
No, they're gonna need a ticket for it. But that's fine. That also gets you to look and say, what are you trying to map?
Yeah.
Where is it going? Should that work?
Yeah.
How do we get the encryption to work properly?
And I have this last piece. This is the mamma jamma piece. This is the hard part. Everything I'm just describing there is...
We've all had fun so far, Ned. This has been a riot. Easy. Scare me.
So, in two parts, I'm going to say, if you really, really are serious about interception attacks, one, you're going to have to block NTLM.
Uh-oh.
Either down to that same sort of allow list of a handful of servers where it's allowed to be used for some reason because you've got some absolutely decrepit garbage device out there, or appliance or some old Linux thing or something where they can't or won't use Kerberos.
Right.
But where you are otherwise saying no NTLM. And the real reason why we do that is not because SMB doesn't implement SMB doesn't implement security. Okay?
Right.
That's it doesn't implement job. NTLM or Kerberos or any of that stuff. It uses the security providers of Windows to negotiate a connection.
Right.
And authenticate and authorize. So everybody who uses NTLM has the same problem here. SMB just happens to be used a lot.
Right.
And that is... people can trick you into trying to make a challenge against their nasty server, and then they have enough information there from that hash that was passed along to try and brute force a password out of it.
Right.
Or guess one with a dictionary attack. And the shorter it is, the faster that'll happen.
Sure.
And there's really no way, unless you really enforce like extremely complex secure passwords that are beyond the realms of humans to make NTLM safe. Like if you use NTLM 127 random characters, yes, you are safe to use NTLM.
It's going to be too difficult for them to hammer their way through that.
Yeah, there's no way to extract that stuff out of there. Now, there are ways where they could also simply pass around these credential tokens as you, not really knowing anything about it.
Right.
It's a much more difficult attack, but it is possible, in which case they didn't even need your password. That's bad also.
They get a token anyway.
NTLM is just not safe, full stop. And then Kerberos is relatively safe, but there are more sophisticated attacks, the so-called silver and gold ticket, and a few other things where, yet again, they don't need to necessarily get your password, so long as it is to get your Kerberos tickets and be able to use them for nasty business.
Right.
So the answer to these things is, one, if you make passwords longer, sure, that's going to stop brute forcing. That's great. But it's not really going to help. And human beings are lousy at it. And you know, the longer your passwords get, the more likely they are to turn into dictionary words.
Yep.
You can use passphrases, but there's really no way to enforce stuff. So the real next step is turn on Windows Hello for Business,
mm-hmm.
and you are going to get a second factor of auth, which is great because now, you know, these single password things are no longer all that is necessary. And you're going to get pkinit in Kerberos, which means that it's not actually using your passwords anymore, which makes it quite a bit safer. Then, if you turn on Kerberos Fast Armoring, are you familiar with Fast or Kerberos Armoring?
No. What is this?
This came around some years ago. We did the world's crappiest job of talking about
that
it.
That happens.
And we're now, again, starting to talk about it quite a bit. FAST stands for Flexible Authentication Secure Tunneling, and that is a series of extra protections in the KDC and an extra set of signing and an extra set of cryptography that makes it impossible to Kerberos, impossible to brute force or dictionary attack user passwords. It makes it impossible to spoof KDCs. It makes local ticket compromise, where you're trying to steal tickets away out of ticket caches. That's no longer possible. It's all this stuff that was designed to make Kerberos like a next generation harder to attack. No one turns it on because we do a lousy job of advertising it. And the reason why we do is when it came out, it required a server 2012 and a 2012 domain functional level.
Right.
And 2012 domain controllers everywhere. And that's literally when it came out in that time frame.
8 years ago.
Yeah. So the thing that you need to do all this, no one had at the time.
Right.
And you had to raise functional levels and basically replace your AD fleet, which no one was going to do at the time.
Right.
And by now, when you really do have all this capabilities, it's sitting there ready to be used. It's forgotten about because it was big, shiny news 8 years ago.
Right. It's years ago. And so by the time we're at the level where we could have done it, it's just not on anybody's radar.
That one is incredibly powerful. It's not super hard to turn on. It's just getting there is the, you know, getting to turning off NTLM and not breaking third parties, you know, that inventory process, and getting to the spot where your AD is basically, you know, the very modern 2012 R2, 2016. And I mean everything, no 2008s lying around at all.
Yeah, they're all cleaned up. You've made it. But if you get to the 2012 functional level, you should be fine.
Yeah.
Like, you just won't be able to do that. It's a couple of eights still hanging around.
Yeah, that's what you need to do. I mean, that's the so many customers don't raise the functional level because it, you know, they couldn't reverse it in the past.
Yeah, they get errors. Yeah. And it is a one way path. Like, and
yeah.
There is nothing scarier in this world than Active Directory is angry with you.
Yeah, we actually even did allow you to downgrade functional levels starting in, I think, 2012.
Yeah.
To roll them back, except that, that didn't land. People didn't believe us, or I don't know. So it's still tons and tons and tons and tons of 2003 and 2008 functional levels out
sure.
there. And of course, you know, the AD team became way more Azure AD focused. And so they stopped, you know, talking about these technologies that really secure stuff, even though that Kerberos armoring stops or makes extremely difficult almost every Kerberos attack there is.
Wow.
It's stupendously.
So this shit, you want this on. Like, this is the one.
Sean Metcalf just did one of his, like, regular how to make AD safe, and he talked about these pieces here. He's always got the best, I think, content on this from adsecurity.org. And his, is it Trimark Security, his consulting company? He's the best one to go look at all of these pieces on. And I constantly try to push, you know, I constantly try to ping him on Twitter to talk more about this and stuff like that. So,
I'll harass him for you.
Besides all these things, my last little piece of advice here inside this super security space is you can actually turn on a thing called Skrill, which is smart card required for interactive logon. That's the ultimate setting of Kerberos security you can possibly make because the user password is actually randomized. The user will never know the password ever again.
Wow.
The whole thing is based on, you know, PIN and hardware. And their password is just like 128 characters of like random crap inside AD. Like, just, you could put a gun to the person's head and they wouldn't be able to tell you what the password is.
They literally can't help you. But this is that passwordless model that we've been talking about,
it
right?
It really is the passwordless model. It has like substantial app compat problems in this model, which means most people don't actually deploy it unless they're like top secret for a three-letter agency.
Yeah.
But there are, you know, between these things, I didn't mention managed service accounts. You don't log in with those, but that should be used in lieu of using actual accounts for service accounts.
Yes.
You take these five approaches inside the Kerberos NTLM realm, and you go from being like, it's the Wild West and almost anybody can just grab a copy of Mimikatz and own the crap out of you, down to being like, it's extremely hard to get even basic, takeover of a user's credentials at that point.
Nice. Now, this is an extensive list of things, and I include the links to the blog posts and so forth. And it is frustrating when you get to these ones where it's like, fast should be on by default now.
I agree. I agree that a lot of this stuff, you've seen my approach to SMB1 and some SMB security stuff. I've gone through over time and tried to make it increasingly secure by default, increasingly likely to, you know, protect you by default, even though we might run into some app compat compromises.
Yeah.
It's a very difficult move to convince all of Active Directory and all of security teams in the world to make similar moves. They're going to have, you know, broadly substantial effects on their users and their third parties and their appliances and their vendor products and stuff. So a lot of it still really comes down to your listeners here, IT professionals following good advice and knowing what there is to put into the stable, blue teamers knowing exactly what their options are to keep red team pen tests folks out.
Yeah, keep them busy. I mean, you're talking about server 2008 stuff.
Earning their keep, even though it's a bad method. You know, that methodology doesn't ever scale. You've always got real work to do.
Yeah, but server 2008's out of support, man. Like, if you're holding up your AD level over machines that really should have been turned off a long time ago, or perhaps have been, but you just haven't lifted the AD level, like, that's to do a post-hack diagnostic and say, it's not that we weren't patched up, it's that we literally didn't turn this feature on.
I have I'm under a very, very restrictive NDA.
I bet.
Around, and I would love to be able to talk about some of the highest of high tech, look at me, we are the high tech cutting edge of the universe companies that I have seen this week in emails running 2008 servers.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah, totally.
Like,
totally.
Their whole shareholder pitch is about how they are on the edge of science and
right.
The edge of technology. And then they're running a server that's on the edge of the dumpster.
Obsolescence, yes. And get instability, you know. And for better or worse, like, virtual machines just make it all the easier to keep those ancient things alive. If it was 12-year-old hardware, it would have caught fire by now.
Yeah, between the VMs and the internet, those are probably the two worst technologies ever invented.
you do curmudgeon so well, Ned. My favorite, honestly.
You know me a long time.
It's been a long time, Fred. Yes, it's very true. Well, I appreciate this. This is a great shopping list of things I could be doing to make my company safer. That are very approachable. Actually, you just got to take some time to study it, roll it out in pieces, and see where you get to.
Yeah, I can throw out the names of these two posts real quick, and then I'm sure you can have.
I've added them to the show notes already, friend. I read them before we got here.
Stacy Grohl, the Beyond the Edge: How to Secure SMB Traffic in Windows.
Yeah.
And How to Defend Users from Interception Attacks via SMB Client Defense.
Awesome, and I will put them in the show notes. These are required reading. They will be a test.
Excellent.
Ned, always fun to talk to you. Thanks so much for coming back on the show.
I appreciate it. We'll do it again.
You bet. And we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.